Section 2, Congressional Reconstruction, an American story. Tensions ran high in the nation's capital as Congress reconvened in December 1865. President Andrew Johnson had implemented his Reconstruction Plan, which was lenient toward the South, despite strong opposition by many members of Congress. One of the more vocal critics was Massachusetts Senator Charles Sumner. Sumner advocated greater rights for formerly enslaved people and stronger punishment for the South. Just days before Christmas, Sumner expressed his distrust of the former Confederate states. "They will continue to assert the inferiority of the African, and they would today, if possible, precipitate the United States into a foreign war, believing that they could then reassert and obtain their independence. On the whole, looking at the affair from all sides, it amounts to just this. If the northern people are content to be ruled over by the southerners, they will continue in the Union. If not, the first chance they get, they will rise again." Quoted in Charles Sumner. Johnson takes office. Lincoln's assassination dramatically changed the politics of Reconstruction. Lincoln's vice president, Andrew Johnson, now became president. Johnson had been a Democrat living in Tennessee before the Civil War. He had served as a mayor and state legislator before being elected to the United States Senate. When Tennessee seceded from the Union, Johnson remained loyal and stayed in the Senate, making him a hero in the North. As Union troops advanced into Tennessee in 1862, Lincoln appointed Johnson military governor of the state. The president then approved Johnson's nomination as vice president in 1864, hoping to convince some Democrats to vote for the Republicans. Johnson was hot-tempered and stubborn at times, but like Lincoln, he believed that a moderate policy was needed to bring the South back into the Union and to win Southern loyalty. Johnson's plan. In the summer of 1865, with Congress in recess, Johnson began to implement what he called his restoration program, which closely resembled Lincoln's plan. In late May 1865, he issued a new proclamation of amnesty to supplement the one Lincoln had issued earlier. Johnson offered to pardon all former citizens of the Confederacy who took an oath of loyalty to the Union and to return their property. He excluded from the pardon former Confederate officers and officials, as well as all former Confederates who owned property worth more than $20,000. These were the people, the rich planter elite, who Johnson believed had caused the Civil War. Those who were excluded could apply to the president individually for a pardon for their acts during the war. On the same day he issued the Proclamation of Amnesty, Johnson issued another proclamation for North Carolina. This became a model of how he wanted to restore the South to the Union. Under it, each former Confederate state had to call a constitutional convention to revoke its ordinance of secession and ratify the 13th Amendment. The conventions also had to reject all Civil War debts. The former Confederate states, for the most part, met Johnson's conditions. While the southern states organized their new governments and elected people to Congress, Johnson began granting pardons to thousands of southerners. By the time Congress gathered for its next session in December 1865, Johnson's plan was well underway. Many members of Congress were astonished and angered when they realized that Southern voters had elected to Congress many former Confederate officers and political leaders, including Alexander Stevens, the former vice president of the Confederacy. Many radical and moderate Republicans found this unacceptable and voted to reject the new Southern members of Congress. Black codes. The election of former Confederates to Congress was not the only development that angered congressional Republicans. The new southern state legislatures also passed a series of laws known as Black Codes, which severely limited African Americans' rights in the South. The Black Codes varied from state to state, but they all seemed intended to keep African Americans in a condition similar to slavery. African Americans were generally required to enter into annual labor contracts. African American children had to accept apprenticeships in some states and could be whipped or beaten while serving in these apprenticeships. Several state codes set specific work hours for African Americans and required them to get licenses to work in non-agricultural jobs. The Black Codes enraged many Northerners. Gideon Welles, the Secretary of the Navy, warned, "The entire South seemed to be stupid and vindictive, know not their friends, and are pursuing just the course which their opponents, the radicals, desire." Reading check. Summarizing. Who did President Johnson blame for the Civil War? Radical Republicans take control. The election of former Confederates to office and the introduction of the Black Codes convinced many moderate Republicans to join the radicals in opposing Johnson's Reconstruction policies. In late 1865, House and Senate Republicans created the Joint Committee on Reconstruction. Their goal was to develop their own program for rebuilding the Union, the 14th Amendment. In March 1866, in an effort to override the Black Codes, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1866. The act granted citizenship to all persons born in the United States except Native Americans. It allowed African Americans to own property and stated that they were to be treated equally in court. It also gave the federal government the power to sue people who violated those rights. Fearing that the Civil Rights Act might be overturned in court, the Republicans introduced the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. This amendment granted citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the United States and declared that no state could deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. It also declared that no state could deny any person equal protection of the laws. Increasing violence in the South convinced moderate Republicans to support the amendment. The most dramatic incident occurred in Memphis, Tennessee in May 1866. White mobs killed 46 African Americans and burned hundreds of black homes, churches, and schools. Congress passed the amendment in June 1866 and sent it to the states for ratification. The election of 1866. President Johnson attacked the 14th Amendment and made it the major issue of the 1866 congressional elections. He hoped Northern voters would turn against the radical Republicans and elect a new majority in Congress that would support his plan for Reconstruction. As the election campaign got underway, more violence erupted in the South. In July 1866, a white mob attacked delegates to a convention in New Orleans supporting voting rights for African Americans. As Johnson attacked radical Republicans, Republicans responded by accusing Democrats of being traitors and starting the Civil War. When the votes were counted, the Republicans achieved an overwhelming victory, winning an approximate 3-1 majority in Congress. Military Reconstruction. In March 1867, congressional Republicans passed the Military Reconstruction Act, which essentially wiped out Johnson's programs. The act divided the former Confederacy, except for Tennessee, which had ratified the 14th Amendment in 1866, into five military districts. A Union general was placed in charge of each district. In the meantime, each former Confederate state had to hold another constitutional convention to design a constitution acceptable to Congress. The new state constitutions had to give the right to vote to all adult male citizens, regardless of their race. After a state had ratified its new constitution, it had to ratify the 14th Amendment before it would be allowed to elect people to Congress. With military officers supervising the registration of voters, the southern states began holding elections and organizing constitutional conventions. By the end of 1868, six former Confederate states, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, Louisiana, and Arkansas, had met all of the requirements and were readmitted to the Union. Impeachment. The Republicans knew they had the votes to override any veto of their policies, but they also knew that President Johnson could still interfere with their plans by refusing to enforce the laws they passed. Although they distrusted Johnson, Republicans in Congress knew that Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton agreed with their programs and would enforce it. They also trusted General Ulysses S. Grant, the head of the Army, to support the policies of Congress. To prevent Johnson from bypassing Grant or firing Stanton, Congress passed the Command of the Army Act and the Tenure of Office Act. The Command of the Army Act required all orders from the President to go through the headquarters of the General of the Army, Grant's headquarters. The Tenure of Office Act required the Senate to approve the removal of any government official, including Stanton, whose appointment had required the Senate's consent. Determined to challenge the Tenure of Office Act, Johnson fired Stanton on February 21, 1868. Stanton barricaded himself inside his office and refused to leave. 3 days later, the House of Representatives voted to impeach Johnson, meaning that they charged him with high crimes and misdemeanors in office. The main charge against Johnson was that he had broken the law by refusing to uphold the Tenure of Office Act. Also because Johnson had removed four commanders in the southern military districts who supported the Republicans, the House charged him with attempting to undermine the Reconstruction program. As provided in the Constitution, the Senate then put the President on trial. If 2/3 of the senators found the president guilty of the charges, he would be removed from office. For more than 2 months, amid intense public excitement, the Senate debated the president's fate. On May 16, 1868, the Senate voted 35-19 that Johnson was guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors, just one vote short of what was needed for conviction. 7 Republican senators joined with the Democrats in refusing to convict Johnson. These senators believed that it would set a dangerous precedent to impeach a president simply because he did not agree with congressional policies. The election of 1868. Although Johnson remained in office, the impeachment stripped him of what little power he had left. Demoralized, he finished his term quietly and did not run for election in 1868. The logical candidate for the Republicans was General Grant, the most popular war hero in the North. In 1868, the Republican convention unanimously nominated Grant to run for president. During the campaign, ongoing violence in the South convinced many Northern voters that the South could not be trusted to reorganize its state governments without military supervision. At the same time, the presence of Union troops in the South enabled African Americans to vote in large numbers. As a result, Grant won 6 Southern states and most of the Northern states. The Republicans retained large majorities in both houses of Congress. The 15th Amendment. With their majority securely established and a trusted president in office, congressional Republicans moved rapidly to continue their Reconstruction program. Recognizing the importance of African American suffrage, the Republican-led Congress passed the 15th Amendment to the Constitution. This amendment declared that the right to vote shall not be denied on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. By March 1870, enough states had ratified the amendment to make it part of the Constitution. Radical Reconstruction had a dramatic impact on the South, particularly in the short term. It changed Southern politics by bringing hundreds of thousands of African Americans into the political process for the first time. It also began to change Southern society. As it did so, it angered many white Southerners who began to fight back against the federal government's policies. Reading check. Identifying. What 2 laws did the radical Republicans pass to reduce presidential power? Time Notebook. Rebuilding the Nation, 1865 to 1877. Eyewitness. William H. Crook served as a bodyguard for President Andrew Johnson and witnessed the decisive vote by Edmund Ross during the impeachment trial in the Senate on Saturday, May 16, 1868. Here, Crook recalls the scene. The tension grew. There was a weary number of names before that of Ross was reached. When the clerk called it and Ross, senator from Kansas, stood forth, the crowd held its breath. "Not guilty," called the senator from Kansas. It was like the babbling over of a cauldron. The radical senators, who had been laboring with Ross only a short time before, turned to him in rage. All over the House, people began to stir. The rest of the roll call was listened to with lessened interest. When it was over and the result, 35-19, was announced, there was a wild outburst, chiefly groans of anger and disappointment, for the friends of the president were in the minority. It was all over in a moment, and Mr. Johnson was ordering some whiskey from the cellar. President Johnson was not convicted. Verbatim. If the South is ever to be made a safe republic, let her lands be cultivated by the toil of the owners or the free labor of intelligent citizens. Thaddeus Stevens, arguing for land redistribution in the South during Reconstruction. In the South, the Civil War is what A.D. is elsewhere. They date from it. Mark Twain, from Life on the Mississippi. For we colored people did not know how to be free, and the white people did not know how to have a free colored person about them. Houston, Hartsfield, Holloway, Freedmen, on the problem of Reconstruction. As in the war, freedom was the keynote of victory, so now is universal suffrage the keynote of Reconstruction. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, arguing for universal suffrage, 1867. We thought we was going to be richer than the white folks, 'cause we was stronger and knowed how to work, and the whites didn't, and they didn't have us to work for them anymore. But it didn't turn out that way. We soon found out that freedom could make folks proud, but it didn't make them rich. Felix Haywood, former slave. Presidential superlatives. While he was neither first in war, first in peace, nor first in the hearts of his countrymen, President Andrew Johnson left his mark on history. First to have never attended school. First to be impeached. first to be elected to the Senate both before and after being president, first to host a queen at the White House, first tailor president who made his own clothes, last not to attend successor's inauguration, most vetoes overridden, father of the Homestead Act. Reinventing America. Patents awarded to African-American inventors during the Reconstruction period. Alexander Ashbourne, biscuit cutter. Landro Bell, locomotive smokestack. Lewis Howard Latimer, water closets, toilets, for railway cars. Electric lamp with cotton filament. Dough kneader. Thomas Elkins, refrigerator with cooling coils. Thomas J. Martin, fire extinguisher. Elijah McCoy, automatic oil cup, and 57 other devices and machine parts, including an ironing board and lawn sprinkler. Milestones. Re-examined, the romantic story of Pocahontas, based on the written account of Captain John Smith. The London Spectator, reporting on the work of Mr. E. Neils, debunks Smith's tale of the young Pocahontas flinging herself between him and her father's club. The young girl was captured and held prisoner on board a British ship and then forcibly married to Mr. John Rolfe. Comments Appleton's Journal in 1870, "All that is heroic, picturesque, or romantic in history seems to be rapidly disappearing under the microscopic scrutiny of modern critics." Founded 1877, Nicodemus, Kansas, by 6 African-American and 2 white Kansans. On the high, arid plains of Graham County, the founders hoped to establish a community of homesteading former slaves. Topped, 1875, the 1 million mark for population by New York City. New York is the 9th city in the history of the world to achieve a population level of more than 1 million. The first was Rome in 133 B.C. Extinguished, 1871, the Peshtigo Forest Fire in Wisconsin. The conflagration caused 2,682 deaths. The Peshtigo tragedy has been overshadowed by the Great Chicago Fire of the same year, which killed 300. Published, 1865, Drum Taps, by Walt Whitman. Based on his experiences as a hospital volunteer, Whitman's new poems chronicle the horrors of the Civil War. Throne, 1867. First Curveball by William A. Candy Cummings of the Brooklyn Excelsiors. In a game against Harvard, pitcher Cummings put a spin on the ball to make it swerve downward. Most spectators thought the ball's curved path was an illusion. Numbers. $7,200,000. Purchase price paid by U.S. to Russia for Alaska in 1867. 2 cents. Price paid per acre for Alaska. $30. Boarding and tuition per quarter at St. Francis Academy, boarding school for African-American girls in Baltimore, Maryland. Students come from states as distant as Florida and Missouri for an education productive of the happiest effects among individuals and in society. $5. Extra charge for instruction in embroidery. $25. Extra charge for instruction in making wax fruit. $3. Tuition per quarter for local day scholars. 5,407, number of pupils in Mississippi Freedmen Schools in 1866. 50, number of schools established for freed African Americans in Mississippi in 1866. 20%, percentage of state income of Mississippi spent on artificial arms and legs for war veterans in 1866.